Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And we made it to Friday once again on the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Jim, I guess it was a few weeks ago where we started to watch all the dominoes fall in the Senate, mainly on the Democratic side of those who would not run for re-election, the Jeff Binghamans, the Jim Webbs, the Ken Conrads. And now, you had suspected it, given his exactly $0 in fundraising in the previous quarter. But Herb Kohl, by the end of this term, 24 years in Washington, four Senate terms. But he is not going to run for re-election next year, which probably means he's not a man who has a stomach for the fight. He's never really had a tough race ever since he first got elected in 1988. And given that Wisconsin is a hotbed for change right now, certainly was in 2010, and given what we said about Scott Walker and the business climate in Wisconsin, things ought to be looking pretty good for Republicans there next year as well. And you got to hope at least there's a relatively deep bench to win this open seat.
It is. It's worth noting that, Greg, this may not have been a huge surprise to us. It's worth noting it was a huge surprise to Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee Chair Patty Murray, who said back in April there would be no more Senate Democrat retirements. So good morning, Patty. You know, surprise. When it happened, people were pointing out the FEC report coming out saying that he had zero donations for 3 months. I mean, you know, it really stands out because you always figure, well, you know, somebody might donate by accident. And then you have the factor of this is all going on during the big grand fight in Wisconsin and protesters marching into the state capitol. And during this really charged political environment, nobody says, hey, let's give some money to the Democratic senator who's up for re-election next year. So that to me kind of struck me as a interesting indicator. Turns out that obviously he is retiring. Apparently there's some word he just didn't want to put up with the aggravation of a re-election campaign. This is a guy who owns the Milwaukee Bucks. He owns a chain of Kohl's stores. The guy, you know, he's going to be fine. This creates a big, messy, probably a messy primary for the Democrats, although it's possible Russ Feingold may try to make a comeback. For the Republicans, obviously a bunch of big names out there. A lot of people already are speculating about Paul Ryan. Our old friend James Pethakakis of Reuters, who is a big fan of Paul Ryan, is saying, now we can get, I think Paul Ryan has ambitions above the House Budget Committee. So I'm wondering if Paul Ryan can run for his House reelection and Senate and president simultaneously. I want him to do all of those at the same time. We'll see. Obviously, Sean Duffy, another promising rising star. I think probably it's safe to say Scott Walker will probably want to stay where he is and finish the, his work as governor. But some good promising young House members, and we'll have to see who else. Obviously, it seems like there's a Republican resurgence going on in Wisconsin. This by no means will be an easy win for Republicans, but I like the comment from Neil Stevens, who occasionally writes over at Red State, was saying, I think Russ Feingold is beatable if they run him again, but let me that's just my hunch. I'm going to ask Senator Johnson's staff to confirm it. And, maybe the state has fallen back in love with Russ Feingold in the interim, but remains to be seen. So pretty good news for Republicans this morning.
The thing that is very exciting for me, and I mean no offense to former Governor Tommy Thompson by this, but this is the first time I think there's been a chance for a Republican pickup in the state in close to 20 years in the Senate where his name hasn't been the only Republican thrown out there as the one who could possibly win the seat. So it's good to see that the bench has lengthened considerably in the Badger state. On to the presidential race, which I think we both hope Paul Ryan is in, but probably won't be. Mitt Romney is considered by many to be the de facto front runner at this point, but he's got a bit of a problem, and that problem is known as Romney Care. And anytime your last name ends with care following a health care plan with no space hyphen or anything else, it means it's probably pretty unpopular, and it certainly is in Republican and conservative circles. So Romney finds himself in a bit of a pickle. He obviously has to run against, and I think he genuinely wants to run against, the president's health care plan. But he also can't take away where he stood and what he did in Massachusetts. So he tried to split the baby here and defend his plan while going after the president at the University of Michigan on Thursday. And, well, here's how it turned out.
I also recognize that a lot of pundits around the nation are saying that I should just stand up and say this whole thing was a mistake, that it was just a boneheaded idea, and I should just admit it. It was a mistake and walk away from it. And I presume that a lot of folks would conclude that if I did that, that'd be good for me politically. But there's only one problem with that. It wouldn't be honest. I, in fact, did what I believed was right for the people of my state.
Now, Romney, of course, is trying to make this whole case that this is an issue of federalism. States should be able to do this. The federal government should not. I think most people generally like the federalist argument in principle. But all these different liberal outlets, MSNBC and so forth, are going back to Romney clips from the previous presidential run where he's talking about, oh, yeah, individual mandates are a great idea. So if one of the hallmarks of the Republican nominee is going to be savaging the big government intrusion of Obamacare, it's going to be pretty hard for Mitt Romney to make the most genuine case for that.
Yeah, I think what's kind of interesting is there's a it seems like a disconnect that Romney really seems to believe that the Tea Party protests, particularly when people get really upset about Obamacare, is that they can't stand the idea of the federal government telling them that they have to buy health insurance, but their state government telling them they have to buy it, they wouldn't really have much of an objection to it. And I think that a lot of for a lot of Tea Party folks, this is just a gut level. Why is my government telling me I have to do this? Even during the Democratic primary back in 2008. You know who was running against an individual mandate, Greg?
Barack Obama?
Precisely. Who was using it as an applause line against Hillary and really jabbed at her in the debates over this. And his idea was like, look, people who want health insurance, the problem is not that there's not a law not requiring them. The idea, the idea that you're going to penalize people for not buying it, that's not really the solution we want. It'd be kind of fascinating that the 2007 era Barack Obama running against the modern era of Mitt Romney, you could end up with the Democrat being anti-individual mandate and the Republican being pro-individual mandate, a kind of a bizarre set of circumstances. I think what's kind of really interesting is you look at – look, National Review endorsed Mitt Romney in 2008. Many people continue to write hate mail to me over it, even though I had nothing to do with that decision. Interestingly, it's really – there's not been a lot of warm, fuzzy feelings towards Romney on this. Jonah said that his speech was a sincere, intelligent, cogent, informed political disaster. Stanley Kurtz laying out that he just doesn't see a way he can win. The Wall Street Journal just savaged Romney yesterday. And so they look for a response from Team Romney. And the Gail Gitcho says, well, they've been writing editorials against the Massachusetts healthcare plan since before it was put in place. To which Ramesh had said, Yes, they have. Right. It was a bad idea. That's, from the very beginning, they said this is a bad idea. Why didn't Mitt Romney know this wasn't a bad idea? And these are not exactly frothing at the mouth of Romney opponents. These are, these are folks who all had at least reasonably warm feelings towards him 4 years ago. I think it's safe to say that none of these people are thinking Romney's a bad guy or there's some appeal to him. But this is a really big hurdle. The way I summarize it is that simply as he will be able to win the Republican primary as long as nobody brings up health care. If he had come out and he had said, you know what, I approached this issue as somebody who just wanted to solve the problem. I saw an individual mandate as getting everybody to pitch in their fair share. I now see from the reaction amongst the Tea Parties that this strikes a chord in people. It strikes many people as government going well beyond its bounds. And as a result, I cannot endorse an individual mandate any longer. He'd be accused of flip-flopping, but, people don't always mind it when you flip-flop in the direction they like. The people who agree with you are kind of like, oh, good. So I think that might have done him more good here, but I guess we will see. It's Romney's call, and it may or may not pay off for him.
Yeah, and in later debates when he and the other front runners are actually there and the issue of health care comes up, he'll be the one, if you don't already know what he looks like, saying, hey, what's that over there? Just to change the subject in any way humanly possible. On to number three now, Jim. And Democratic demagoguery has been a long-standing tradition of the party, and demonizing oil executives has also been a major theme of the party, especially when gas prices get relatively high or very high, as they are right now. So yesterday, the Senate Finance Committee brought forward a handful of the CEOs of the biggest oil companies and basically tried to savage them and went after them. Chuck Schumer pilloried one of them for saying that ending the tax breaks for oil companies would be un-American. He just thought that was insane. Here's Jay Rockefeller, West Virginia Democrat, in a very interesting exchange with one of the executives.
I think you're out of touch, deeply, profoundly out of touch, and deeply and profoundly committed to sharing nothing.
I don't think the American people want shared sacrifice. I think they want shared prosperity. And what we have to offer,
lovely statement. But do you understand how out of touch that is? We don't get to shared prosperity until we get to shared sacrifice.
We all have to suffer, Jim. Suffering must come first. There's no prosperity around the corner until all of us are miserable.
That's the Democrat slogan for 2012. Suffer. All of us will suffer, and the floggings will continue until morale improves. I'm kind of struck by the approach to, you know, what is everybody upset about? High gas prices. So what's the Democrat approach? Let's take away these tax deductions. That doesn't really, you know, it doesn't make any more oil come out of the ground. It doesn't make transportation costs any lower. It doesn't make refining it any easier. You know, other point that kind of stands out to me is, you know, it basically is a very straightforward, aren't you mad at oil companies right now? Don't you just want to find an oil executive and beat him with a stick? Well, we're the Democratic Party. We'd like to take away these tax deductions they have. If these actually worked to reduce gas prices, people might be on board with it. But this is, you know, just flat out, you know, hey, let's make an oil company executive pinata and everybody take a swing at it with a stick. Maybe it'll work, but I have a suspicion that American people kind of would prefer something that would actually, you know, make gas cheaper. Which is, you know, the number one gripe on everybody's minds. It's not just, you know, look, if my gas is cheap and I can fill up my tank for $20, or you get it to, you know, $1 and something a gallon or $2 a gallon, Greg, you know, I don't care if these guys are swimming in a giant money pit like Scrooge McDuck. I don't really care how much money they're making as long as I'm not being, you know, socked every time I go to fill up my modest light SUV.
Yeah, exactly right. And, you know, then they block every single attempt to actually expand domestic production and wonder why we're so dependent on foreign energy and why the prices keep going up and we're completely beholden to OPEC prices. But the thing I liked yesterday is usually these CEOs come in, whether it's Wall Street, oil companies, and they're just kind of like, they take the beating and they move on. Yesterday, those guys fired back pretty heavily. It was a pretty good exchange, and I think they're tired of just rolling over and playing dead for politicians who really don't know what they're talking about. I was pretty impressed with some of the execs yesterday. On that note, Jim, have a great weekend. We'll talk to you on Monday.
Looking forward to it, Greg. See you Monday.
You got it. Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.